Just a little bit of introduction. So last fall, Emma Caddy asked me if I would give a series for Neely, and I thought, there's so many amazing shiurim happening in the community, there's so many incredible educators, what am I really going to contribute to the mix? But I told Emma, I said, you know, something I'd really like to work on personally is chesed. So we could make a group and we could work on it together. And that's how the chesed three-part series in the fall started. And we did chesed for the super busy, super stressed superwoman. Some of you in the room were a part of it. And we looked to Rebbetzin Henny Machlis of Blessed Memory as our role model. And after that, some of us wanted to continue, and we made a chesed bad, and we explored different chesed role models, and every week we had a mantra of the week and a mission of the week, and we worked on things together. And then in the spring, we switched to Zoom, and we did our pre-holiday shiurim with a bent on chesed. And for me, it's been an incredible journey. I feel like I have learned a lot. I'm still working on it. But I really appreciate everybody who's been a part of the process. And I thought, this is a really great time, as we're going into Shavuos, this is a great time to really redouble our efforts in chesed. We know that the Jewish people only merited to receive the Torah when they were ke'ish echad b'lev echad, when they were like one person with one heart, when they committed to this idea of interconnectedness and commitment to one another. And on Shavuos coming up, we're going to read Megillas Rus, which the Medrash tells us is all about chesed. It's acts of loving kindness performed selflessly in the context of deep, loving relationships. And receiving the Torah, which we're about to do in less than 2 weeks, is all about opening ourselves up to connection, to responsibilities to one another, to the flow of giving and receiving that comes from immersing in a relationship with another person. So tonight, we're going to bring all of our learning from the past year to life. We're very blessed to have four role models from our community. I know none of them would call themselves chesed role models. They're all like, just tell everybody we're just regular people. We're all going to work on chesed together and just have an open discussion. But to me, they have been an inspiration, so I'm really excited that they're all here and going to share some of their insights with us. Just a little bit about each of them, and then I'll let them also introduce themselves a little bit more. What?
You didn't turn it on. Is it on?
No, it's on. Yeah. Thank you. okay, we have here Fran Gutstein. This is Fran Gutstein. She's a social worker, a therapist, and a Rebbetzin. She's a mother and a grandmother who's been a force of chesed in our community for decades. Through a genuine love and respect for every fellow person, Fran provides emotional support and guidance to the countless individuals who have connected with her over the years. Aviva Valensky, who's worked in intensive care medical units for over 25 years and now works as a therapist at Upward Community and Illinois Healing Center for Trauma and Addiction. She has involvement in multiple chesed organizations and believes that everyone should find their own unique way of doing chesed. We have Eve Levy here, just back from Israel and having her coffee right now. Eve has been involved in outreach throughout the world and now heads the L'Chaim Center in Deerfield with her husband Gadi Levy. Rabbi Gadi Levy. Her passion is helping Jewish women find their unique light, and she's dedicated her life to the spiritual well-being of Klal Yisrael. And we have Tammy Miller here, who works as a hospice social worker and volunteers for multiple organizations in the community. She's the founder of the Or Torah Chesed Committee and is passionate about being a chesed role model for her children and helping grow the chesed in our community overall. So the way the panel is going to work tonight is the panelists are going to introduce themselves. After which I'm going to read some of the questions which have come up that have been submitted in advance. But please also, hopefully everybody has a notepad and a pen. If you don't, there are some more in the back. Thank you. So if you would like to submit a question, just you can write it on the paper. You could put it at the edge of your table, and I'll come and grab it from you. And then we'll read those questions anonymously and hopefully get to as many questions as we can. Okay. Thank you so much to our panelists for being here, and I think we'll start with introductions. Aviva, will you open up?
Hi, everybody. So I guess I would just say that my feelings about chesed, I'll stand up because I can't see all of you, but my feelings about chesed is there's no right way to do it and there's no wrong way to do it. And chesed is really individual and really personal, and it's kind of like a river through life. What's your chesed in the first, when you're young or when you're, you know, in high school and they make you go do whatever chesed you do, and then you have chesed, you know, when you're newly married, and as you move on, your chesed changes. I really believe very strongly that the right chesed is the chesed that works for you. So doing what somebody else does or what someone tells you to do or what you think you should do is not necessarily real chesed. I mean, it is real chesed. I'm not saying it's not, but it's not a chesed that you're going to be able to take with you for the rest of your life or that's really going to bring meaning in for your life. And so I think when we all sit here and start thinking about the idea of chesed, to take a second and really be honest with ourselves of, like, what works for us and what doesn't. What am I doing because I really want to, right? When we all talk about different ways, what resonates with us and what's like, huh, like, I think I'd want to do that. Or what is like, well, I probably should do that, or everybody knows about that. You know, that's really cool, or whatever. Because if we can really find what works for us in ourselves, then doing the chesed is much easier than we sometimes feel like it is. And I feel like only when it's we try to do the chesed that maybe somebody else is doing that we really struggle with it. So I hope the idea that I can give over to you throughout tonight is the idea that your chesed is beautiful and your chesed is your own. And your chesed is so individual, just like we're all individuals. And that's ultimately what the chesed Hashem wants us to do as ourselves.
That was so inspiring. That was great.
So I think chesed is like looking in a mirror. First of all, I want to say that you've never truly seen yourself. If you think about it, you don't really know what you look like. You're only a reflection of yourself. If you think about it, you only know what you look like from the mirror. You only know what you look like from a picture. But if you think about chesed, when you're doing chesed, it's really like a reflection. It's like looking in a mirror. It's like looking back at yourself. So when you're interacting with somebody and you're doing chesed, if you can become truly present with them, and you can become so present with them in that moment, not here, but here, and you can feel where they're at, and you can feel their situation for that moment. It could just be like a split moment. It maybe even could be like the checkout person at the grocery store, and you could say to them, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It could be just a smile. In that moment, you're seeing yourself in that person, and you're giving that person something. So it's like a reflection of yourself in that person. So in that moment, you're reflecting your positivity and your strength into that person, and that joy and that positivity that you give that person reflects back to you. So you want to get something from that chesed. When you give it, it comes back. Got it?
Okay. Hi, guys. Okay, so there's a famous quote in Pirkei Avot, Ethics of the Fathers. It says, Im ein ani li, you guys probably know this, mili, if I am not for myself, who am I? Help me out here, I'm very jet-lagged. Im ein ani li, mili. Sh'ani la'atzmi ma'ani. And if I'm not, right, if I'm not for myself, who will be for me, right?
No.
If I'm only for myself, then what am I, right? Ve'im lo achshav, achshav, ve'im lo achshav, ve'imatai. And if not now, when? Okay, so it definitely starts with you, okay, because you cannot give unless you are a complete, whole, you know, vessel, right? We cannot really give to others. In fact, on Sunday, if some of you were there, I gave a workshop at the CTN Soul Purpose, what's it called, the CTN?
Spa Day
for the Soul, and we spoke about the three relationships that we're always juggling, which is inner, yourself, outer, all the people around you, all the circles in your life, all the relationships, and upper. And we're basically jugglers of inner, outer, upper all the time. And when one is off, we're completely out of sync. But chesed really starts at home. And before you could give outside, you have to make sure that you have what to give. You're not giving on empty. And that's really where we start. So chesed definitely has to start with a little bit of self-care and love. And once you got that down pat, you could extend yourself outwards. And that's where the fun begins. Because if you're ever in a bad mood, or if you're ever having a bad day, the biggest hack, life hack, give to someone else. You cannot be sad while giving to somebody. So this is like something that I teach my kids all the time and we practice at home. Like, if you are feeling a little down, we all feel down. Sometimes we're all feeling, you know, like, what am I doing here in this world? Just give. Just give. Because givers are happy people. So we all want to be happy. So giving is the antidote. It's just, that's a great rule for life. Just give, give, give. So I saw this at home growing up in Toronto. My parents were tremendous people. I mean, I don't think they think that they are. I don't think that I am. I don't think my kids think that they're such givers. But it definitely, what you see at home and what you just, it's more powerful than words is action. So I saw it in action. And there's never like a decision process. Like when you're in the point of like, there's a decision you have to, you know, are you going to give? Or are you not going to give? Tonight I had great fresh content. I'm exhausted. I'm like lying on the couch. I'm like, kids, make me a coffee. I have to get back in the car. And I got a message like ping on my phone. Someone said, I don't know, you don't know me, but I heard of you. And her father had fallen, and she's en route to visit her dad in Toronto. And she couldn't get straight to Toronto. There was a layover. So she said, I'm stopping in Chicago for the night, and I fly out in the morning. So she said, do you think I could stay by you? So I kind of looked at it, and, you know, there's lots of weird people in the world. I don't know who this person is. And so I took, like, about a second, and I said to my kids, someone wants to stay with us tonight. So the kids were kind of like, well, who is she and what's the story? And without thinking, I said, for sure, you could stay by us. So I had someone over at the house, and she's like, how do you know? It's so dangerous, whatever, your husband's out of town. Like, and I said, I just have a feeling. Like, she's a Jewish woman that needs support. Like, she could stay in a hotel, but she wants the support of another Jewish woman. And in the end, it was a very quick conversation. She's boarding the flight, this and that, and I sent her my address. She's like, you know what, it's half an hour from the airport. I'm just going to stay in a hotel, but I'm so appreciative. And I told my kids, I was sorry, you don't need to prepare the room while I'm gone. She's going to stay at a hotel. And all my kids were really, really sad, like really disappointed. So I was like, yes. So anyway, so I guess it's just like, you know, don't think too much. Don't be so scared that if you give too much, you're going to become a shmata. Because you're not going to be. That's the Christian idea. Like, we grew up with the book, The Giving Tree, right? You guys know that story? So, like, the more you give, the more you are depleted. That's not what we believe. So don't be so, you know, if you have what to give, give. You'll be happy.
So I'm a little embarrassed standing here because I'm so incredibly inspired by all three of you. So if I make a mess of this, I apologize. I just consider myself extremely fortunate. Don't tell my parents and my in-laws, but if I have to look at four people who really inspire me, it's them, and they will deny it also. And my husband as well. And I remember when I met him, I just saw his heart first, and I said, I really think this is going to be the one. And he gets me, and most people don't. So I think that I never really sought out chesed. I think that it's from inspiration and making connections. And I think that, like, a little piece from what all of you said, I think, Fran, like, when I look in the mirror, I don't see, the first to criticize. But when I see myself sitting with somebody, and I know that they're gaining something from this experience, I take away so much from it. And I think that for me is not purely selfish, but that this is a mutual relationship, and whatever it is. As Aliza said, I'm a hospice social worker, so I have this infatuation with death. Don't judge me. It's just who I am. And so a lot of the things that I do are taboo to talk about. Nobody wants to talk about it. Being a part of Chevra Kedisha shouldn't be a secret. It's the most beautiful mitzvah and any form of chesed in the entire world. And if anyone has questions, I'm happy to answer them privately. So a lot of the stuff that I do is death related, and to kind of backtrack
a good... Or publicly.
And to backtrack a good, you know, 20 years or so, I lived next door, married, baby number one, next door to a wonderful Holocaust survivor who had dementia. and she was a housewife, and she was obsessed with cleaning lint off floors. So I would keep my door open to my apartment, and she would keep her door open, and she would literally crawl and lift the lint off my floors. I mean, great. Like, if that's what you want to do, okay. I'll mop afterwards, but this is a great working relationship. And I remember just, we were so close, and her daughter was taken from her in the Holocaust and killed in front of her eyes. And because of the dementia, she relived that day over and over and over again. And anyone who knows about working with someone with dementia, you can't put them into reality. That's where she was at. So I can't even imagine over the years how many times I sat just holding her and not being able to say anything. And I think from there and that experience with her and seeing how much she meant to my very little kids, when I finally moved to Chicago, I said, we need to keep that connection up. And so I sought out Council for Jewish Elderly. From that, I adopted an old man in the process. From there, my life changed. Everything that was child-oriented, work-wise, all of a sudden became hospice and geriatric. And I feel like I've been on a journey, and everyone that I have helped along the way has helped me become the person that I am. And my goal has always been to be a role model for my children, the way my parents and my in-laws have been. And when my oldest, who's almost 20, sent me the book about Henny Machlis and said, Mom, this is you. And I said, not in a million years, but I'm not much of a crier. But I sat through that book and I cried because I thought, my son thinks that this is me. And make a story even longer. Rabbi Machlis, I was just in Israel and I met Rabbi Machlis and he invited me to his house for one of his meals. I literally was going to just faint right there. Anyone who was with me, they were mortified because I was just tongue-tied. I was so excited. So I think that for me, chesed is about connections. And it's about, through those connections, growing and seeing the best side of yourself. And I think for me, that's what it's about. It's about balancing your life and giving because it feels right, not because you're being forced to or it's the right thing to do. So that's my little story.
Okay, our first question is, what benefits do you feel you've gained from doing chesed? And how can we stay motivated to do chesed and do it without resentment? Tam?
So I think this is what I was saying, is that the self-care is what I get back. And I don't go into it thinking I'm doing this so I can get. I think that there are, as you said, there are givers in the world and there are takers. I've always taught my kids, be a giver. But sometimes the hardest thing is when you're at a point in your life where you need to accept some help too. And whether you're going through a hard time or your family, I think that I've gained so much more respect for myself. And I've been in situations that I may not have been 100% comfortable with, but it felt right because I knew it was just the way I can give. So I think that going into something and doing it for the right reasons because it feels right. You know, we live by, the Torah. And I think if the Torah isn't about community and giving, then it's, what does it mean if you light candles and keep kosher? If you're not thinking bigger picture and, how can I help somebody who's a part of my bigger family? So I think there's always something to gain. It just has to speak to you.
Lisa, are we allowed to jump in if we
want
to add
something? Yeah, I was going to say, anybody's welcome to add.
I want to share a little story, if that's okay. So this is totally by accident. I'm not such a tzedekes, but I started a gemach, And it was, as I said, totally by accident. This is going back many years ago. So my second child is, he's turning 18. So after he was born, I had a couple miscarriages, one after another. So I was young, I was newly married, I had two little babies, and I was like looking, you know, excited to grow my family, and I love shopping. So I went to Toronto during the beginning of my pregnancy, and I came back to Israel. I was living in Israel with two huge motherhood maternity bags of clothing. And I didn't get to use that clothing because I ended up miscarrying the pregnancy. And I took the bags and I shoved them like far away, like on the top of the cupboard, and just kind of out of sight, out of mind. But every time I needed to get something from the top, I saw those bags winking at me, and they just were collecting dust. And then a year later, again, I'm pregnant and I'm excited, and the same thing happened. Same time, same place. A year later, I lost the pregnancy. And at that point, I had already added another bag. I was so excited. And I just realized that I had put so much faith in these bags. Like, this was like my hope. And I was totally off balance. I wasn't putting my faith in Hashem. I was a little bit off with my, I was holding on to something that was, I didn't know if it was going to ever happen. So it took a lot of strength, because I think we sometimes get attached to physical things or to the dream of what was or whatever it was. It was so silly. It was like clothing, you know? But there were so many people in my life that were expecting, Kolel wives, that couldn't afford brand new clothes. And I just said, you know what, I have all this stuff. I mean, I don't know if I'm ever going to use it. I don't know. I mean, who knows? We were not in charge. And it's going to go out of style. Maybe I'll use it in a couple years, but why don't you guys come over and take whatever you want? So it took a lot of strength at that time. But I just, if you want a zchus, like you want a good merit for something, I mean, I wanted to have another child. And it wasn't easy. So that was the beginning of a gemach that grew and grew. And when I remember once making a deal with Hashem, I said, Hashem, all the clothes is taken, all of it's gone. I've given it all away, but there are more women that need. And people were coming to my house saying, do you have anything left? And, well, do you have this size and do you have that size? And really everything was like size medium, large, and I needed extra small and I needed extra large. And I remember like going online and making like a $500 order for Old Navy maternity in small, extra small, small, medium, large, extra large. And Baruch Hashem, I was blessed, right? It was a blessing for me. And Gemach was born. So 10 years later when I left Israel, we moved the gemach, and it's still running till today. It's not my gemach anymore. I don't check in on it. I just gave it all over. I gave it to another woman who wanted that zechut, that merit. And so not saying that it started from such a holy place. It was like I wanted something out of it, but I got so much more out of it than I ever expected. Thank you.
Should I go on to the next question?
Yeah.
You good?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. The next question is, how do we know when to say no and how to set appropriate boundaries in chesed?
So as a therapist, you know we love the word boundaries, but I'm going to talk to you guys now just as a human being. For me, this question was very real for me because I have a problem. I love to try every new chesed. I believe everything new in life. I believe you should try it once, but I love to try every new chesed. I love to try every new thing. I think nothing is too big. I think everything's going to take 5 minutes. Like, if you ask me, it's like, no big deal. I'll have it ready for you 30 minutes, done. And everything, as we know, really doesn't take that short. Everything is a lot more work. And yet, I kind of always have to say yes. It's like a problem, right? So over the years, I've really learned this whole idea about boundaries by saying to myself, like, what do I really want to do and why do I want to do it, right? So sometimes I want to do it because I'm feeling kind of down and I want to pick me up, right? Sometimes I do it because, I don't know, it sounds cool, or like, I get to, you know, I fostered some babies. I love babies. So that was like, ooh, this is awesome. Like, I'm totally in on this one. And sometimes I want to do it because, for purely selfish, like, people tell me I'm like the chesed person, right? That's so cool. So like, you want to build that up. Sometimes I want to do it for modeling my kids. And sometimes I don't know why I want to do it. I just want to do it. But what I've learned over the time is to be able to be truly authentic with myself and say, why are you doing it in this moment? And in all my experiences, as crazy as they have been, and for you, those of you that know me, I do some crazy things, I've never one time resented a chesed that I personally wanted to do. Okay, so I've never resented, whether it means staying up all night, whether it means schlepping things, bringing things, I've never done it. The only time I ever resented it is when I did it, either for what other people are going to say or because I was pressured into doing it, right? So then how do you learn how to say no? Because when someone tells you, don't you want to do a chesed? Like, don't you want to help that person, right? Like, no. Wait, what? Nobody says no if you ask them if they want to help someone, right? Like, then you start thinking about yourself. But what I realized in that moment is to say, like, that's just not the chesed for me, right? Like, I can do other chesed. And so I don't want to, I don't know, go to the store and schlep your groceries and drop them off at your house because I just don't want to today. Not because I can't, just because I don't want to. And that's okay for me to say that I don't want to, because then I never resent it. So in order for me to process that bad feeling of like, oh, I just said no to a chesed that I know I could do as I'm sitting on my couch, right? Because I really could just go, but it's late and I'm tired and it's been a long day. I find a replacement chesed. And I'm like, that's not the chesed for me to do right now. But you know what? Chesed could be as simple as saying, I know that this person's struggling with something, so I'm just going to like say a parak of Tehillim for them. Or I'm going to take a second to think about them or send them a text, and that's their chesed. And so I'll replace the chesed I don't want to do and alleviate my guilt, although I should have no guilt, into something that's way more practical for me. And so that's how I really don't end up with resentment, but also set boundaries. Because if I'm true to myself, then I know what I do and I don't want to do. And then my chesed just keeps growing on the areas that I do. And like I said before, like it changes, right? Forever, I used to be making meals for everyone. It was like, everyone had a baby, was sick, I don't know, sneezed funny, and I was like, oh, let me just bring you a meal, right? Like, it didn't matter. And now I hate that. I hate doing it. It stresses me out. I come home from work at 4:15 or whenever I come home, my kids love it because they get like this really fancy dinner, but like, I hate the pressure, so I don't do it anymore. And I got off the groups, and sometimes I feel bad, and I'll hear that a million other people are making meals, and it's not for me right now. And if I told you that, not exaggerating, I've probably made thousands of meals over my life, yeah, but I don't want to do that anymore. That's just not where I am right now, and that's okay. And so when I hear that other people are doing it, I have to remind myself, like, it's okay. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be, that's not where it fits in my life right now. The other thing that I think really helps with boundaries is this idea of, like, I'm not better than the person who I'm giving to, and I'm not in a better place than them. We're all in this together. It's me and you. I have my good days, you have your bad days, and we're just in this together. So what do you really need right now? And I'm going to help you there. So whether it's scrubbing your floor, you know, making you dinner, although I really do hate that, but no, but like making you dinner, wash your laundry, drive your kids somewhere, watch your baby, it doesn't matter. Because when I realize that we're in it together, then I don't have to show up to them any more than I can show up for them. And when I show up for them in the amount that I can, then there's no boundary issue. Because I don't have to say, like, oh, I got my life together and I'm going to show you I have my life together by doing this all. Instead, I'm like, wow, you're just having a little bit worse of a day than I am today. So, like, I'm going to do this for you and, like, you'll do it for me tomorrow. So I'm not going to do more. I don't have to show up. There's no show to put on. It's just two of us trying to do the best we can. And I think the idea of really showing up as your authentic self, realizing why you're doing it, and knowing that we can all change and do whatever we want to do when we want, and really realize together that we're in it together and we're just really supporting each other, those three things naturally create this healthy boundary of what we should and shouldn't be doing for ourselves to allow this chesed opportunities to really grow and foster amongst us. Hope that makes sense.
Thank you. Okay. The next question is about chesed at home. Any advice for focusing on chesed within our family or home, such as caring for elderly parents, children, sick family members? This can sometimes be even harder than doing chesed for strangers. Fran?
Do you want me then to, there was another question, like, did you just want me to focus on the, I feel like it's so much.
The question that we already passed.
Wait a minute.
No, it's the other side.
Whatever you say is golden.
Wait. Wait a second. There was another question with the.
She might have gotten with it.
Fran, you have two big ones.
Okay. I just have a long answer. Okay. So I want to say that chesed in our home can be different. Doing chesed outside of our house sometimes involves an honor, a piece of paper, you get noticed. It doesn't always happen in your home. You know, you close the door and it's very different. So sometimes that's a reason why doing chesed at home is different. You kind of let your hair down. You know, you take off your tichel and people see who the real you is. So that's a reality. When you come home, it's not always so easy to do chesed at home. So I think it's a reality that we deal with on a constant basis. We're a different person at home than we are outside of home. There's a different honor that we get outside of home that we get in home at home. But then there's a flip side to that, because if you're always honored outside of your home, if you're a big person outside of your home, and you come home and you feel like you're not anybody, and you're really not seen as somebody that feels a sense of importance in your home, that really doesn't feel very good at all. So the real challenge is seeing that the most important place to really push yourself and see that doing the chesed is at home. Because the place that you really want to see, that you can feel that sense of honor, is at home. Because at home you really want to be seen as a somebody. Because when the doors close at night, you want to feel like you're seen like somebody that the people that you love the most really care about you. And what you give the most to, you really do love the most. So when we give that extra and we really push, it's really worth it. Another thing that I want to say is that sometimes it's hard to give in our family. When you give outside of the family, you're giving to somebody that you don't necessarily have a history with. You don't necessarily get all this stuff that gets dredged up. But when you're giving inside in your home, there's sometimes some baggage that comes along. Like, why do I have to do that? They never appreciate me. They don't really care. They never call. Why should I do for them? So sometimes giving at home brings up triggers for us. So it's harder to do. And, you know, when we get called to make a meal for somebody, there aren't the triggers. But when we're giving at home, there's the triggers. So it really makes sense that it's harder to give at home. So everything that we're feeling about why it's harder to give at home absolutely makes sense. So when we give ourselves permission to say, this is harder, this chesed is more difficult, and when we tell ourselves, I am doing a chesed that's more difficult, it almost makes it easier to do the chesed. Okay, thank you.
Can I say something? On like Beautiful. A total practical kind so of scam Hashem so way, good. In like a healthy way, if you do chesed for your parents, you'll get a rechas yamim, and so you double dip for the same thing. And so any opportunity I have to do something for my parents, I'm in, because I get two for one. Just offering you that view and mindset of it.
If I can also comment on that, I think I have a completely different perspective, and I think that it's true that for some people it's harder. For me, giving to my family is by far the easiest and most pleasurable. I can't do enough. And I feel, again, when I have a relationship with my kids and they look at me, that my mom's all about chesed, I want to cry. I mean, I used to be on every board. You know, I used to be on Neely board, and I used to be on my shul board, and this board, and that board. And I slowly stopped because I said, you know, it's important to be a part of the community. And again, great intentions. I want my kids to understand you have to give back. And I realize every night during those ugly hours when your kids need help, going to sleep, doing their homework. I was out at a stupid board meeting, bored out of my mind, talking about budgets that had nothing to do with why I wanted to be there.
Tell us how you really feel.
Exactly. So I am true to myself. So I think for me to stop and say that my family is the priority, and when it comes to chesed, if I don't do it at home first, how could I be giving to other people, and how can I expect my children and my family to give to others? I find it more refreshing at home. I think because of the sensitivity of the work that I do, not all my family members want to hear about it. Yet I know that the important thing is for them to be able to talk about their day freely and to open the lines of communication. So I might not talk about any of my experiences, and I could have had a horrific day. But being there and being present and showing my parents the love and the respect that they gave me selflessly for so many years, I'm just so honored and privileged to be living in the same city as my parents and to give. And when they refuse something, I say, but you're refusing me the opportunity to do something for you. It's not about you being helpless. It's about me wanting to just give back and say thank you. So I find, you know, the polar opposite is that it has to start from your family and from home. And there is baggage. But you take that baggage with you and you just feel good about what you're doing. And you say, like, and there are times where I could be frustrated, but I say in the car, I talk to myself all the time in the car, is rise above this. You're better than this, and you can do this. And I give myself a little self-talk, a little, you know, slap in the head, and I'm like, you go.
And we've all driven past you and seen you. We're like,
what's
you
know? Exactly.
Now we know.
But nowadays, everyone thinks I'm on a cell phone. I'm not. But I, to me, like, that's what it's all about. If it doesn't start at home, then it doesn't seem real to me. Because I don't think of myself as a different person inside and out. I think inside the home is where my major focus is and my devotion.
This is so interesting because there's four of us, and I bet you all have four different opinions of this. Because I do both. I want to do some at home.
Yeah.
I want to do some outside. I don't want to be always home. Sometimes I want to get out of that bedtime. I do. And sometimes I want to just be in my house with my kids, like right now, right? I'm just saying, I think that, again, this is all about what works for you, right? Like, be true to yourself. You like, I'm not saying you don't love to be home, but I'm just saying, like, everybody does what they want to do and where what works for them in the moment in their life where they are today. Because where you are today is different where you're going to be tomorrow, and it was different where you were yesterday. So when my kids were really young and obnoxious, I was out a lot more. I had to save people. It was needed. And now I'm like, meh. Yeah, I'll stay home. You guys all go, you know, it's fun. We could play a game or something. So I think it's just where you are in your life, you know. Anyway, I think we've killed that question.
Yeah, that was actually, that kind of bled into another question. I'll just add one piece for people who might still be skeptical. I felt like when we were doing the Chesed series, and I was interviewing a bunch of different people in the community, and I kept hearing this idea of, like, you need to find what works for you, and what somebody else is doing isn't necessarily going to be what works for you. And I kept thinking, like, but maybe what doesn't work for you is exactly what you need to work on, and you have to, you know, push yourself out of your comfort zone. I was very skeptical about this idea, and I felt like I needed to hear it from a Rav. So I contacted Rabbi Matenki, and I contacted Rabbi Reis, and they both said exactly the same thing. You know, that there's, thank God, we have, you know, many amazing people in the community, and each person has the things that work for them. So we don't necessarily, you know, sometimes you have something that falls on your doorstep, and, you know, it's like, only you can do this. You know, it's falling into your lap, and then you might be called to say yes to it. But just, you know, although we'll talk a little bit more about some of the opportunities in the community, just feeling like we need to push ourselves out of our comfort zone just for the sake of doing that is something that I just keep hearing again and again, like, do what works for you. One of the things that we talked about in our series, in our Chesed Vad, is the idea of spiritual Chesed, of the Chesed of davening for a person, of sharing an inspiring Torah thought with somebody, sharing a mitzvah with somebody, inviting somebody into your home for Shabbos. I think for some of us, that's a little bit, for me, definitely, it's a little bit out of my comfort zone sometimes to do that. So I wanted to ask Eve if you could share some practical tips for spiritual chesed.
So just like you mentioned Henny Machlis, so I read the book, I loved it, but I did not cry through it. Mm-hmm. I felt like so out of reach, right, for my life, right? I'm not having 100 guests. I've been at Henny Machlis's table. It's actually an amazing experience. But that wasn't my go-to, but when I read Esther Jung Grice's book, I cried every story, every page, really related to it, because she's kind of my role model in that she was doing, you know, the spiritual chesed, you know, and that's something that that's my life, that's what I'm doing, trying to do. So to really, in a nutshell, what it is loving your fellow Jew, really just loving every single person. Not judging people, really giving people a space to be themselves. In fact, the lady that texted me out of the blue tonight and said, "Can I come sleep at your house? I need some support." The second paragraph was, "Is it okay if I don't come in a skirt and my hair is not covered?" I'm like, I wouldn't have even noticed. You know, you come exactly as you are, and that's perfect. So. So Rabbi Sinyon Grice is just one of the many role models that I've had. And over the years, I've realized that what it really boils down to, what people need, is someone to love them and accept them and see them. Just see them. Make space for them. And that is probably the greatest gift, in my opinion, you could give another human being, is just a listening ear and a shoulder to cry on. You don't need to have all the answers. You don't need to have any answers. Just to listen to someone and to nod your head and to make, right? I mean, you guys are professional therapists and all that. All you do is mirror it back to them. So what you're saying is, right? I mean, seriously, and they're paying you the big bucks for that. But, but that's, we'll pay any amount of money, right? We'll pay any amount to just have someone listen to us and see us and understand us, to be understood. So, I mean, we could take it one step further, showing people what their soul is all about, showing people the beauty of Judaism. I mean, from people, not from people, it doesn't matter. Everyone could use this. So that's like the next level. But on a basic level, we could all do this every single day. Find someone. Everyone is going through something that we don't know about. It's almost like everyone's walking around with a sign on their head that says, "I'm struggling," right? So wherever you are, whoever's in front of you, if you could just see them as someone that's struggling, going through something hard, and you could smile at them, you could make space for them, you could ask them for coffee. Like, just the smallest things make a very, very big difference in people's lives. So I think the greatest chesed, just without money, without too much time, without anything, just to be there for another human being, a text message saying, "I'm thinking of you," or following up saying, "How is your mother feeling now?" You don't even know what that does. That means, like, you care about me. And that is probably the biggest basic human need, to have connection, mm-hmm. to just feel like you're somebody when the world is so busy and everyone, like, it feels like, you know, and when you're in the supermarket and you're like, "How are you?" And you're like at the next aisle before she even has a chance to say, "Fine," right? But I always say, like, when someone says "fine," it really means it's code for feelings inside not expressed, right? Because you have to get a little bit deeper. You can't just, like, walk on after a "fine," because really, they're not fine. No one is fine. Everyone is struggling. So really, what Esther Jung Grice used to do, if anyone had the schud of seeing her, has anyone here met Rabbi Esther Jung Grice? Aleha HaShalom. So what she did, and I remember I was a young you know, newly married in Jerusalem, when I waited in line after her speaking engagement to, you know, there's a line up to get a bracha on my head. And what I remember of her, which I would love to do, I don't feel like I'm so important to do this, but what she would do is she would hold your hands, right? She would, like, look at you in the eyes and you know, "What's your Hebrew name?" and give you a bracha with your Hebrew name. And I just remember, like, I could almost feel her wrinkly hands in my hands. It was so special. No one else existed at that moment. And it was worth waiting an hour and a half after the event just to get that bracha and that connection. So I think, you know, we could take it spiritual. You could teach people all of Torah, but really people just want to be seen, heard, felt, and loved, and embraced. And we could all do that. So that's, I don't know if that's the answer to your question, but some ways of doing spiritual chesed. I mean, it could be something so, so small. And I do a lot of carpools, and I live in Deerfield, so I have kids in 5 different schools. And I use my time in the car either talking to Hashem, right, which is, you know, usually we like pow out things for the day, or making phone calls. I used to listen to podcasts, and, you know, there's lots of fun. You can listen to music. I mean, I love that time in the car, but there are so many people that are in need of just a phone call that sometimes I spend 4 hours driving, and the time with my kids is the time with my kids. Like, chesed does start at home, but the time that I'm driving back and forth without them, I'm just reaching out to people because people need to be reached out to. So that's the spiritual chesed that I could start with is that. It's that basic human need and connection.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
So as she's talking about being on the phone for 4 hours talking to people, my anxiety is like rising up. I'm being totally serious, right? This is where I'm just trying to show you the appreciation of how everyone's different, right? The thought of talking to people on the phone for 4 hours, I love my family. I hate talking to them on the phone, right? I hate talking on the phone. For me, my spiritual one, right, is I love having, as my whole family is in the corner, they're probably all laughing because they know it's true. But the point of saying that is everyone has their own way. My way is I love having people over, like Kirov people over or people that are new to the community. I have never one time had a horrible experience with them or they said something awkward. I mean, my husband usually says the awkward things at the table. But I'm saying, like, it's always pleasant. And when they leave, I always say to them, thank you for, like, your inspiration. Thank you for reminding me why what I have is a gift. And so if anyone is out to try to maybe try something new after this conversation that may sort of interest you, that's not so bad because they don't actually expect real food. They're, like, so pleasant, so happy with, like, anything because they're used to not really eating a lot. Like, just having anything homemade, I should say, they all eat. But just having, like, one of them over one time and just having a conversation or seeing them in the street and be like, hey, are you new? Or, like, whatever. It uplifts me personally. And this, is again, might be my chesed, but it uplifts me and my whole value and beauty of Torah to, like, levels that I would never have expected. And the amount of work, it's one extra place setting at the table.
So a word on that, because
yeah.
I love that. Let's just talk about Shabbos guests,
yeah.
Right? Because that's very intimidating for a lot of people, and you feel like you don't have it together enough, and, right? We're all together with that, right? You just feel like everything has to be perfect, and da-da-da, whatever. That was a long time ago. But really, when people are coming to your house, they're not coming for the food. Like, they have chicken at home, you know? Like, they're coming to feel connected to you and your family. So that they can't get anywhere. That is the greatest gift that you could give them. It's not about how fancy the meal is. Or, in fact, I don't know if I can share another story, but it was like, you know, one of those weeks where, like, you really don't have it together. And we finally had these guests that my husband was trying to get for a very long time, and they were very hard to reach, and they were very turned off from Judaism. And it took months of trying and inviting, and finally, my husband's a mohel, so he did their bris of their son, and then for many weeks after, he would bring them a challah, and at first, they wouldn't even open the door. They literally were like, you can leave it at the door, like, we're not interested in your kirov, we're not interested. So finally, they came to our house, and it was a hard week in my family, and I don't know, one kid was, like, kicked out of school, and it was just, like, one of these weeks that was, like, it was a disaster.
I want to hear
so,
that.
So, yeah, that's another one. So that week, we were all kind of exhausted and depleted. The house wasn't perfect. We were just like limping to the finish line. And it wasn't a show. It was like, this is us. You know, this is the real deal. My husband made kiddush. And then, you know, he blesses the kids. I also took on the minhag. I give brachos to my kids on their head. And we're just doing our thing. Kids are fighting in the corner, you know. We look over, and this man, his name was Yehuda. He grew up in Muncie in a cheder. Like, he really just grew up in, like, you know, the heart of the Frum community, and he left it all. But when I looked over to him, he was sobbing. He was sobbing, and it was such a beautiful moment where, like, I said to him, Yehuda, I don't know what you've been through, I don't know your whole story, but I'm so happy you're here with us. I'm so happy. And it was like, that was my realization. Like, it doesn't have to be perfect. Like, what we have, even at our worst, is such a gift to share with another person. So they're not coming for the fanciness. They're just coming for what we have, the gifts that we have, the connection, the realness. And that to me woke me up. And I don't even attempt to do perfect anymore because it's not perfect. And that's also okay. So thanks for bringing up the Shabbos thing. Because people are thirsty for Shabbos. People are thirsty for authentic Yiddishkeit. Anything authentic, people are thirsty for. That's why Brené Brown is like the biggest guru in the world. Like, she speaks about vulnerability and authenticity. And that is something that us in the from world really need to work on. And we could do this. We could really be real. And that's the most beautiful thing we could give to another person, is your real self without all the trappings and barriers. And you know, they don't want that. They just want you. So where are we up to?
Anyway. All right, we do have a few more questions in here, but just a reminder, if you have any questions that are coming up as we're speaking, please write them and pass them to the end of your table, and we'll try to get to them. Okay, how does one deal with welcoming a very depressed person to visit frequently when the whole discussion centers around the visitor's low self-esteem and berating herself? And maybe also in general, how do we approach chesed with people that are difficult sometimes to be around? Bren?
Okay. So I guess I kind of want to take a little bit of a swerve there. First of all, I really want to thank you, because I kind of feel like you kind of touched on that a little bit, that people want connection. And that's so important when we think about dealing with somebody that's difficult to be with, that they really, really want the connection. So in that same vein, and it's also important for us to be taking care of ourselves. So there's really this balance that people want connection, and we also need to be taking care of ourselves. So I want to answer their question, kind of balancing both of those pieces, and hopefully get to an answer there. So I think that sometimes when we can be helping someone, I think sometimes there can be a point where we might be over-helping a person. And when that's happening, we might be actually hurting that person. You know, when somebody is pulling from us and pulling from us and pulling from us, and it's feeling like they just want so much, and they're just, it's so much and so much and so much, we're not helping them anymore. And it's also hurting us. And I think that comes to the point of boundaries, but something else happens. Like, this comes to this place where we're starting to feel like, I should be doing this. I should be doing this. And when we're hearing ourselves say, I should, I should, I should, I think you need to listen to that should. Because sometimes behind that should is almost some shame. Like, what am I really feeling bad about? Like, what am I feeling like I'm not good enough here? And I want to suggest, when you're starting to feel that I should with somebody who's over-pulling, like, I really should, if I was like a good enough person, I really should be doing for this person, I want to suggest that you start replacing this with the I can, I will, I am. Because that makes it a lot healthier for you and a lot healthier for them. Okay, because you don't want to overhelp that person. You want to create connection. You want to give them that connection. And you want to stay healthy too. So let's say you're going to visit somebody, or someone's coming to visit you and they're like really pulling from you. And you say to them, I'm looking forward to seeing you. I can stay for a half hour. And this is really nice to be spending time together. And now it's 2:30. I'm leaving. And I'm looking forward to seeing you next week. And it's very different than that talk inside, I should be doing more. I should be doing more. Yesh gvul. It's important to create that gvul in the way you're talking to yourself and in the way that you're presenting yourself when you're doing chesed. Because you need to be taking care of yourself also, just like you said, which I really appreciate. Because you can't do chesed unless you're presenting yourself like a whole person. So I think that would be my answer to that question. Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Can I add on something? Yeah. Sorry. I'm like the practical one. I think they're also spiritual. I feel like what I've learned over my time with Chesed is I used to solve everyone's problems, or I used to do my best. Like, I'd hear about a story, and I would come at it, like, at every side, every way to, like, I would solve the problem. It didn't matter if I would get it done. And I think over time, as I've morphed with my chesed work, I realized that it's not, I can't, which was really hard to accept, and it threw me for a big loop. But once I worked through it, like, when people are having hard times, which is most of the time when people need chesed, right, they're just in where they are, like, you want to just take away their pain, and you hope that the chesed takes away their pain. But I think, and there comes guilt, and, like, it's hard to leave or hard not to do that next piece, or I should or whatever. And I think the idea of just realizing, like, that's not your job, right? Hashem gives them what he gives them. It gives us, right, because I have it too, whatever Hashem gives us. And our job as the people doing chesed and supporting that person is just to do that, just support them. So in whatever way you can, great, but don't try to solve the problem, which I did for many years. I was really good at it, by the way. I'm an excellent problem solver. But then it became so draining. Like, I couldn't, like, every time someone called me and said, hey, will you do this? It was like, oh, why? What's going on? Oh, this and this and this and this and this. And I, one thing that I was asked to do became like 40 things, and then I would do the whole entire thing. So I think it's really just important to realize and remember that our job isn't to solve it, and it's only to support them, and it's only to do what we can or what we realize and identify that they need. I think that's like a really, for me, it was a really important message to learn.
Thank you.
Okay, there were some other questions on here that I think we've already touched on a little bit, but I'm wondering if we can speak practically about opportunities for chesed in the community and just helping everybody, you know, we've talked about how there's different brands of chesed that work for every person, so what are some of the opportunities in the community and how do people choose what works for them? Aviva, do you want to start?
Oh, sure. Wow. There's so many opportunities.
Where are the sign-up sheets?
I could start throwing them out. Well, I just heard about this new organization called Sisters to Sisters that's coming to Chicago. Sisters to Sisters is a mentor for divorced women. There's the Chicago Chesed Fund. The Chicago Chesed Fund needs stocking, needs delivery, they need money, they need organization, they need management. There is the Chicago Torah Center that needs rides, development. I mean, I could go on. There is not one area in this community that people don't need. And I feel like chesed is one of those things, when you look for it, you find it. It's like when someone's deciding, you know, what shoes they're going to buy, all of a sudden they notice everyone's shoes. It's just kind of like that. When you're out to look to do chesed, the opportunities will just come your way. Chesed is opening the door for somebody, helping your neighbor who's an older person, carrying in their groceries. It could be, if you want a big organization, High Lifeline is looking. I was just having a conversation with them. They're looking. There's a time is coming to Chicago. We just started Kesher Nafshi in Chicago. That's an organization that's always looking for people. Meaning, like, there's always every organization. So if you are looking for real.
Can you explain what all of those organizations
sure.
are?
Sure. Yeah, but I'm not necessarily sure that that's the best benefit for here, but I'm totally happy to do it. I think that if anyone is really missing and looking to join an organization, I'm happy to give out my number and we can go through it. But a time is an infertility role, is an infertility and fertility treatment place. Kesher Nafshi is for children, families with children that are having are struggling with religion. There is, I'm trying to think of all the other ones that are totally blanking on my name right. My mind, Chicago Torah Center, Ramat Zliach is always looking for people. Sarah Porsche is always looking for people. Meaning there's always a lot of opportunities to do, and I think that one of the beautiful things that Hashem gives us is that he gives us the opportunities that fit for us in our lives right now if you're open to look for it. So as soon as you start looking, Hashem's going to send the opportunities your way. Some people like to do organizational work. There's a million chats. There's the Beaker Hole and Kitchen. That's a huge one. The Chicago Mitzvah Campaign is always looking for people on every level to cook, clean, talk to elderly people, help case manage. I forgot about them. The Beaker Hole and Kitchen. Chicago Torah Center's kitchen, like, there's every aspect of really everything. But I think the idea is, if you look for the opportunities in front of you, they're always there. And once you do one, it kind of naturally leads to another. But there is one thing I do want to say about chesed, is that it's a challenge. When you do your first chesed, it's like, awesome, I'm so good, I have this. But every good thing you do, Hashem makes the Yetzer Hara, right? next to you parallel to what you're doing to make sure it works. So when you do the first couple chesedim or you do them naturally, it's like really easy and it's feeling good. And then it gets harder. And it gets harder, and sometimes it can get really hard to do. And yes, I 100% believe in self-care, and I am a big advocate in knowing yourself. And I do think, though, that sometimes when we're at an opportunity and we're saying, should I do it or should I not, right? Is it what's right and serves me correctly now? It is important to look at our value system and say, is this in my value system, and is this what's something I would want to do, and then push yourself to do it. So that doesn't mean always, and be honest with yourself if it's not a time for you to do it. But one of the things the organizations are mentioning, and I literally just had a call about this today, is that people are very into self-care and not overdoing it, and therefore they don't want to extend themselves out. And so the same people are running every organization. Every organization is run by the same group of people that go from one, and then they try to steal them. It's like, you know, you have to, like, protect your employees, right? So, like, they... oh, you volunteered at that? Oh, do you want to come join us? And like everyone does. So I think it's really important in a generation where everybody talks about self-care and everyone talks about being for yourself. And it is very, very true and important. And I'm not saying that it's not. But it is also an opportunity for us to really evaluate ourselves and say, Hashem is going to put the Yetzer Hara next to us. And he's going to make it hard. And is this what I believe in? And is this my value system? And do I have the ability to do it? Because let me tell you, there are plenty of nights that I'm cutting up vegetables and it's really late because I'm having an event in my house the next day and I worked all day and I'm really tired. And I do it anyway. I do it anyway because it's what I believe in and it's hard and I believe in it and I wake up the next day and I'm like, ooh, I make good platters when I'm tired. Like, they're pretty and they're done and everyone comes in and at the end I feel good about it. And so the pushing was worth it because it fit right with me and it was good. So I think it's very important to remember the self-care, but it is also to remember our value systems and push ourselves and to understand that we all need to take care of each other because we're going to need to be taken care of one point in our life and we need to also take care of each other. We need to be taken care of and we also need to make sure we take care of each other even if it's a little bit of a struggle for us. Everyone's quiet. And she left.
This is your shoot.
I'm totally overwhelmed her.
I'm totally messing it.
By the way, I looked at her while you were talking, Aviva, because that totally resonated with her. By the way,
oh, I'm totally
messing. Does anybody want to add? Because this is your opportunity to plug the organization of your choice.
You know, I think it's easy to pick organizations, and I think that the ones that you named. You know, you open up any Chicago, Achino, anything, like, you can find the places. And I think that, for me, like you said, things fall into your lap. And another big piece for me is this giving back. How do I give back? How do I give back to my parents? How do I give back to, you know, my in-laws? How do I give back to this one and that one? And this year, I have a friend who works for Yachad, and I've always known about Yachad, and it just wasn't my thing.
Libenu Yachad.
So, Libenu and Lave. I worked for Lave this year, mm-hmm. And Lave is a respite program for families with children with intellectual, physical disabilities. I mean, you name it. And the first 2 weeks, I went in there, and I saw there were, I don't know, maybe 13 kids. It's a respite program from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Sunday, they just started, and it's Monday through Thursday. So during those ugly hours when you need to concentrate on your kids and their homework, and you have this child with special needs, it's very hard to juggle. And so there's this respite program, and it's meant to be fun. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that sounds like a great opportunity. And I go the first day, and I see these kids, maybe they're 13, 12, whatever it is, the number, and one is verbal. And I went home, and I cried. And again, I told you already, I'm not a crier. I cried, but I cried. I cried, and I cried, and I cried for, like, a few weeks of doing it. And I said, oh, my gosh, I have taken for granted the brachot that I've been given and my healthy children, and, you know, I'm so tired, and God, did I sleep well those nights. But, like, being with them was so exhausting. And then, just a few weeks later, I totally forgot that they weren't verbal. Because I got to know these kids, and I think what you said, the connection and the love and the excitement when I saw them walk through the door and they saw me there to greet them. And then I cried even harder because I said, these are my kids. Like, I love these kids. And I'm sort of, I attract freaks of nature. That could be very surprising
we
for a lot
friends.
Of you. Right? So I will say there is a limit. The paranoid schizophrenic who's homeless,
I
will not allow her back in my home because I did not feel safe. But everybody else, I'm not great at inviting my friends, unfortunately. It's a character flaw, and I need to work on it. But my complete strangers, you know, you get that email from Shull, and it's like, oh, here's a person coming to Skokie. They don't know a soul. And you're thinking, what could possibly be wrong with them? You don't know anybody in Chicago? You must be a freak of nature. I'll take you in. And I have the strangest stories, but I look at my kids, and they look at me, and they're like, again? And I say, Hachnoset Orchim. You're going to learn this lesson, and you don't know what we're going to experience, but we're going to do the best that we can, making sure this person feels our hospitality and fighting in the corner, and they can jump in on the couch and try to separate you guys by all means. And I have had some of the most meaningful Shabbases, and that's when someone stops you, and the people who aren't Jewish or the people that have no connection, and they ask you why you're doing that. And all of a sudden, I'm asking myself, why? And I'm responding and remembering the beauty of what goes into every Shabbos, and the beauty of lighting candles. Read what the brachot are in English. They're gorgeous. They're beautiful. They're so meaningful. And so when you open your home, you really never know. And I think it's not your home. It's opening your heart. These Lev kids are phenomenal. And because of work, I can't work there anymore. But one of the kids heard me on the phone with somebody, and he was like so excited. And I heard him screaming it back, and he couldn't say, you know, in words, oh my goodness, Tammy, it's you. And I'm screaming on top of my lungs to this kid. And I'm like, I know you recognize my voice. I love you too. And I'm like screaming like crazy. And it fell into my lap. I didn't know I was going to adopt a million unaffiliated college students and people that had absolutely no direction in their life. But they're a part of my family. And when people ask me how many kids I have, I'm like, well, I have three biological kids, but I'm like, there's a whole swarm of people out there that kind of want to be a part of our Shabbos and our family because we have opened our hearts. And so I think that there are opportunities. Sometimes it's not what you think you're the most comfortable with because these Lev kids, it was really challenging, but I'm like, it breaks my heart that I'm not there with them every day. So I think for me, the takeaway from tonight are, you know, some of the like catchphrases are authenticity and self-care and connection. And for me, because of work and what I do and the chesed I do, it's about perspective. You can always forget how lucky you are. But when you see other people struggling, sometimes that's your aha moment and the slap in the face saying, I really need to appreciate what I've been given and what Hashem has given me. Because we all believe that this is coming from, you know, straight from Hashem. I think balance, having for my experience is that I go to work, I come home, I'm cooking, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. But my chesed is my balance, too. And that's where I feel the most healthy when I have a nice combination and using those boundaries to find that combination. And at the end of the week, you say, I gave, I got back, and I'm going to continue to give because this is, like, right for me. And that makes you feel whole and complete and connected and that that's what makes me want to go on more.
Beautiful. I do think that we do need, there's one topic that was on here that we didn't get to that I think is important to do, which is family. So I love to make my family do chesed with me. Hey guys, it's party time! I decided today in 3 hours, everyone's coming, let's go, right? But what I've learned over time, because I have 6 children and they're all a little bit different, is that if I take the chesed on, it needs to be my chesed that I am taking on myself, and I offer it to my children to be part of it. So you can't, if you want to keep doing things and pushing and it interferes with your life, my personal opinion is you cannot force it onto your children because then they don't want it. So you have to model. I make it fun. Like, we get really stupid creative with a lot of the things we do because my girls like that and it's fun for them. I mean, I like it too, but it's fun for them. But it's really important to realize that if you're taking on the mitzvah and this is something you want to do, you have to respect that your kids might not feel the same way. And sometimes I have to say no to something because I know that it's just too much for the kids. And so I think it's important as women, as leaders and teaching our kids and modeling, that we also model to take in their feelings, their experiences, what their boundaries are, and then also to have the hard conversation of, like, can you really not do it? Are you just tired? But I think it's important to just recognize that your kids do play a role in what you're doing. So if you're out every night doing chesed and they're resenting it, then it's not the right plan. If you're making parties and they're loving it, great. But I think it's really just important to realize that they have a huge role in it, and what you do affects them in the way, whatever way you sell it. And they're not going to want to go on and do chesed if you're stressed out and, like, pulling out your hair and yelling, which I may have done sometimes. Like, oh my God, there's 30 minutes left. It's not done. Like, everybody, let's go, right? So, like, I've learned over time that's not the best way to handle it. It's more of like, okay, so it doesn't get done and people show up and we're not really ready. But then they all come and everyone gets it ready together. So I think, you know, part of that was my own self-maturity. But part of it was also realizing, like, if it's going to be stressful every time I have something, they're never going to want to do it. So, like, hey guys, want to throw a party? Sure. Okay. And that's what we do. Literally.
I just want to add to, if we could go back to when you, like, rattled off all the chesed organizations and like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know.
There's
that.
Many more, and by the way, for real, here. Before you know, you say one thing, but my number, Aliza has it, I'm happy to leave it. If anyone is really looking for a chesed opportunity and has not found what is right for them, Baruch Hashem, I have been blessed to be involved with many, many organizations, underground and above ground is how I call them, the ones that people know about and the ones that people don't know about. And I'm happy to help anyone find whatever suits for them if saying hi to someone or cooking for someone, like, isn't enough. But not listen.
So I believe that Hashem talks to us all the time by putting opportunities in front of us and by opening our eyes to certain things. So there's an expression, and maybe Aliza, you know where this comes from. I think it goes, Bimkom she'ein ish, hishtadel lihiyot ish. Is that Pirkei Avos?
Yes.
And is that how it goes? Is it?
Yeah.
Or is it Bimkom she'ein anashim?
Ein ish.
Ein ish. Okay. So which means in a place where there is no man or no person doing the job, you need to man up and do the job. So one of my fears, I just moved here 10 months ago from Portland, Oregon, and one of my greatest fears moving from a very, very small community to Chicago, which is like, overwhelming, so many organizations, and wow. So one of my fears was that, how am I going to make a difference? Like, who needs me, right? Being in Portland, like, there were literally a dozen of us from people over there, and we were holding up the community. So how do you go from that, from being called upon to host, to this, to that, being a mikveh attendant, or, you know, very, very scary when I got that first call to come to the Chevra Kedisha, and, like, we need you. We don't have someone, and I didn't learn about it. I've never done it before, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm filling up, you know, buckets of water, and I'm drilling holes in the coffin because it wasn't made from people. It was just like, you know, I'm like, fixing the tachrichim, like, I had no idea what I was doing, but all of a sudden you're put in a situation where there's really no one else to do it. And sometimes that could be really scary, but there's also such a beauty in getting involved in something that literally, like, you know that Hashem wants you to do it. So instead of getting overwhelmed because there's so many causes, first of all, you know yourself, you know your heart, you know your drive, you know what you're pulled towards. And I think you should listen to yourself. I think you should, like, listen in a quiet place to all the, you know, it was very overwhelming when you're like, we have this, we have that. I'm like, right? Because they're all amazing organizations. And for some of you, you're thinking, like, I first need to get my home, you know, organized. Or you know, Chesed does start at home, and we all want to change the world, but it starts with you, and it starts within. As you said, it was really, really smack on, right? Just, like, build your own world first before you could give, all of us here tonight, I'm happy not to be doing bedtime tonight. Like, I'm here for a reason, right? I mean, we all have our things that we need to work on. Let's just be real with ourselves and try to fill a need that no one else could do. Because you have a gift that no one else has. Like, you have a sensitivity or a drive that other people don't have. Like, I know that you're very involved in your organization for your daughter, right? What is that one called?
Yahalom.
And I've been to one of your events, and I was blown away. And I just feel like there is so much, like, that's your calling, because that's your situation. And Hashem, like, knocked on your door and said, I need you to take charge and help dozens of other women in your community. Like, I mean, it's so clear. Like, that's what I'm going to put my effort to, right? But for someone else, I mean, it might be completely a different thing. For someone that gets involved with a time, it's probably someone that has experienced infertility themselves so that they could be able to relate and understand to the person that's suffering. So I don't even know what I'm saying. But long story short, I truly feel that we need to sit with ourselves quietly and ask ourselves if it's the right time. When I left Portland 10 months ago, I remember when I did my last Tahara, I told the head of the Chevra Kedisha, someone that I became very close with, I said to her, Donna, this has become my mitzvah. Like, wherever I go, this is going to be my mitzvah. And now my whole life has changed. And I haven't even contacted the Chevra Kedisha. I think I tried. I reached out to you once, and I'm like, I want to do it, but right now, I have a totally different circumstance. And it doesn't seem like I'm needed over there, because there's probably a million women that could do it, right? In Portland during COVID, right? Am I wrong?
No, there's enough. No pressure. If people want to join, come on
I mean,
enough.
I'll tell you, during COVID, I mean, this was actually a very hard thing for my mother and I. We fought a lot about this. My mother was very, very paranoid and scared about COVID. And at the time, our Chevra Kedisha, most of the ladies were 70 and older. And I was the only young person. And if I didn't show up to do the Tahara, it wouldn't have been done. And we went, like, you know, I one time I even brought my daughter. Like, I had no one to take. I'm getting very emotional because I really wasn't sure if it was the right thing to do. My mother was so angry at me. She said, there's COVID in the walls. Like, it's everywhere, you know, and I was scared. And hazmat suit, head to toe. I took off my shoes before I got into my car and changed, like, five times before I got home. Like, it was so, I was so paranoid. But at that moment, there was nothing else. Like I had to, like, not, you know, I had to, like, kind of, I didn't know if it was the right thing for my keyboard of aim. My mother was so paranoid about it. And I almost, like, thought, like, maybe I need to lie to her, because I just know that this is what Hashem needs me to do right now, and I'm petrified to do it. So when I left Portland, it was like that, after such a interesting experience with this mitzvah, I told the head, I am going to be continuing to do this. But when I got here, right now I'm needed in a very different capacity. Like, I was plopped into Deerfield. And aside from one Chabad house, we're the only from family in the entire city of, like, 100,000 Jews. And I'm busy from morning to night with a different type of chesed. And I never expected this, and I didn't know what I was getting myself into. And the Shabbos before the Begins left, because they made Aliyah, we took over, their son, who's 12 years old, he said to me, do you know what you're getting yourself into? You have no idea. Like, he was, you know, like, a kid could, like, tell you as it is, right? I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean? And then the next Shabbos, like, I'm literally on an island, and we're the only ones doing Shabbos. Like, we're holding up a flag for Hashem. It's a very different chesed, or I don't even know, Jenna Handler, right? You know Jenna? She's a chesed person. So I bumped into her. I just met her once, and she said to me, she said, it's like, the chesed that you're doing right now is like, it's like being pregnant. That right now you're just feeling so bad about yourself and, like, what am I doing? And I don't know. She's like, but there's just you being there is, like, potential. Like, you're holding something within you. Like, you're just maybe not feeling like, rah, rah, like, this is amazing, I'm making a huge difference. But there's different ways of doing chesed. So what I'm saying is, listen to your calling. Listen, because Hashem is talking to you, and you will know what direction to take.
Okay, we're gonna wrap up in a minute. I just want to make sure I didn't miss any questions. Are there any questions around the tables? Okay.
We're so good; they have no questions.
I know, everything was crystal clear. Okay, I just want to ask if you could give us a 30-second. What do you feel everybody should know about Chesed? Maybe it's something that's already been said that you want to reiterate. Maybe it's something new. What are our final four takeaways?
You're all looking at me like I gotta start. All right, my 30-second takeaway is: remember that your chesed is your own. Do what authentically feels right for you. Remember, Hashem has given you your capabilities and your abilities, and you are different than the person next to you. So do what Hashem gave you in the way that you want to do it, to the limit that you can. And remember that sometimes chesed is hard, and we need to push ourselves to do it. So it's not an oxymoron. It works, but just remember that. And thank you guys all for coming out, because even here, just seeing this is a chesed in its own, because it motivates everybody else to really, truly better themselves. And so you've all accomplished a chesed. And you can always text me on a chesed day that you feel like you need to do a good deed and just be like, hi, thinking of you. You inspired me. You know, something good, it'll bring me up.
I agree. I'm so grateful I came. Yeah. I learned so much. Okay. So I want to say that chesed is all about relationship, and it begins with ourselves. And when we strengthen ourselves, we can connect with others. And through that connection, we can see the good in others. And it builds the strength in ourselves. And it just we just grow that positivity. And that's really what it's about. Okay.
Okay. Hashem could have made a perfect world. Right? Could have been perfect. But Hashem left holes in it for us to fill, which means that Hashem wants us to be his partner in fixing the world, right? Tikkun Olam, I mean, it sounds very like, I don't know, it's like, I don't know if that's like a very like reform conservative, like that's like, everything is Tikkun Olam, Tikkun Olam. Okay, but it's a real thing that Hashem wants us to fix, right? He left holes for us to be his partner, and that's a real privilege, right? Imagine the world where no one would need each other. It would be a very, very sad place. If no one would knock on your door for a cup of sugar, it would be a very depressing existence. So it's a chesed to us that we get to do chesed. Okay? Now, how does the Torah begin and end? With acts of chesed. What's the first act of chesed that God does for mankind? He clothes Adam and Eve. What's the last chesed he does? He buries Moses. Right? With it, you know, kisses him, buries him, like he takes his soul with a kiss. Chesed, from beginning to end. And we are supposed to emulate God. That's our job in this world, to emulate Hashem. So Hashem is full of chesed, always, you know, compassionate and loving his people, forgiving his people, and we're supposed to emulate Hashem. So I think that's something to think about, to be a little bit more godlike, to extend ourselves to other people, because that's what Hashem does to us.
So I think it's still a mistake that I'm sitting here with the three of you, because you guys are incredible. Don't cry. I told you, I'm not going to cry. Uh-huh. I do think that you have to ask yourself if you feel complete and if you feel whole. And if there's something missing in your life, and what is that gap? And I think that I'm trying to put this, you know, eloquently, and I'm struggling here. But I think it's more Musar, is that we were meant to give, and it's who we are. And if you look around, every organization, every shul, nearly everything we do, we have constant role models. And I think if you look at people and you say, wow, I wish I could do it, you just have to have some faith in yourself. And the opportunities are there. And I think we're all happy to help in whatever it is. I mean, if it's death-related, hello, call me. But it's, you know, be true to who you are. But there's so much fulfillment. And like I was saying, I feel whole at the end of the day because of what I do and because of who I am. And that doesn't mean that there aren't 400 flaws that I can list off right now, but we're out of time. But I just think it makes me feel genuinely human and good. And those are really two takeaways that are worth more money than anything in the world. And there are people in the world who are in a position that they can give a lot of money, and we need that. And that's not something to belittle. Writing a check is important. We need that. But we also need people on the ground physically giving and spiritually and making that connection. And I want to thank you all. I think being here tonight says something about each of you. I'm humbled by this experience. I'm going to call Emma Katz and tell her I'm never doing it again. But I've loved it, and I thank you for coming and listening. And you guys, like, kudos to you, all of you. And Aliza, thank you for putting it together.
Thank you. I want to thank all of our panelists. I also was going to say that I think it's incredible. Everybody who's in the room, this is a tribute to you and your commitment to Chesed, and those of you who have committed the time and the energy and the thought and put your heart into it throughout the year, these Chesed Shiurim. I've learned so much from all of you. And I'm thinking about one of the things we talked about was role model as a compass. Right? So I'm listening to all of our panelists speak, and I'm like, I can't do that, but I could take a step in that direction. So I hope that we can all come out of here tonight and take a step in the direction of Chesed, finding the ways that work for us. I want to wish everybody a wonderful rest of your Sefirat HaOmer, wonderful Shavuos, and thank you again for coming.